Well, uh-oh. Alice sounds sick. We're still having mic. Oh, no, she is sick. No, her mic must be fine. Okay. Well, welcome everybody at 7:41. This show is finally running. We've had the gremlins tonight. It is February 4th, 2010, and Alice is sick, and Cheryl just got in the door from a parent-student-teacher conference, and this is Bob down in South Berwick, and I'll send it on up the coast.
And this is Cheryl in Wells, and I'm going to send it a little further up the coast.
Hi, this is Alice, and yes, I have my lovely, sexy telephone voice this evening. So welcome, everybody. So Horizon Report, here we go.
Yes.
Yes, we're going to talk about the Horizon Report. We don't have a guest tonight, and if we run out of things to talk about that, then we're going to launch right into the latest theories of Lost, which came back on this week. Are you a Lost fan, Alice?
No, I'm not. Oh. I'm afraid to get sucked in.
Yes. Good plan.
Yeah.
Are you?
I am. Oh, yes. And yes. Cheryl is, too. And we're really happy it's back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Any Lost fans in the chat room? Waiting for a response. We lost them. No, we're not really going to talk about Lost. We're going to talk about the Horizon Report, 2010 edition. And Cheryl and I were saying this. It's like Christmas when this comes out for us. We get so excited. Do you feel that way, Alice?
Yes, I love this report. always sort of like... I don't know. Makes me excited to see what's going to happen next.
And it always surprises me. I always think, oh, it's out now?
Uh-huh.
Maybe it's coming out earlier each year. I don't know. I need to really look back, too. I usually stick right in the present report, and I'd like to actually graph what's changed. And they talk a little bit about that. But
right, right.
But there's some new stuff this year that I don't remember from last year. Shall we jump into it?
Yes.
All right. Well, if you're not familiar with the Horizon Report, it's put out by the New Media Consortium and EDUCAUSE Learning Initiative. And I don't remember that being a partnership before. And I could be wrong about that. And forgive me if I am. EDUCAUSE, is that new? Cheryl, Alice?
I don't remember it either.
Yeah. So that's very cool. And they put it out every year, and they talk about their methodology in the report, and it's very, very readable, and kind of talks about the key trends that are happening, and they have different horizons. So there's the near horizon of adoption of technology that should have or will probably happen in the next year. And then the second one is, what, 2 to 3 years, right?
Uh-huh.
And then 5 years out. So you want to just start with the big one that's been there for years, actually.
Right,
In the year thing. Go ahead and start there, Cheryl, if you'd like.
Okay, I was trying to put the URL in the chat, but because we can't.
I will do that.
Okay, you can't drag it. You have to type it in. So,
dragging, and it worked.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Didn't work on mine.
Okay.
So, unfortunately, my highlighted copy is back at school. That's what I was just looking.
I've got like 3 highlighted copies.
Oh yeah. Well, it's back at school. First of all, I think we should. We're going to talk about the big report, but there's also a 2010 Horizon report that's a preview. That's about 6 pages. Very, you know, if you have to read it start to finish, you know, in a short amount of time, that's a good one to start with because it summarizes everything. And then, of course, after you read the preview, you're going to want to go and download the 38-page report and, you know, have that for your bedside or your coffee table because there's so much in here. And even before, and I have to say that this is really targeted to college campuses, the original Horizon reports. And last year, Lucy Gray was on our show, and she was on the show the day that the K-12 Horizon report debuted. And I'm hopeful that that will happen again, but I haven't heard anything or read anything about that. Have either of you?
No, and I was just going to ask you the same thing, and I really hope that happens again because that mm-hmm. that was wonderful. But yeah. this, I mean, even though this is university, it really spans right down to us. I mean, don't you think? You know, I mean, absolutely. I'm reading this and I'm thinking, okay, you know, like even like some of the augmented reality, the last part of what's it called? Not visual data. Anyway, thinking about Wii's in the classroom and stuff, I wanted to talk about gesture-based computing. You know, yeah. I mean, that really, you know, we're going to be hopefully seeing that, you know, and they say in 5 years. There's another version, too, I just wanted to say. I'm sorry to interrupt, but you have the 6-page bathroom copy, mm-hmm. Then the bedside copy of 38 pages, and then you want to go back onto the website because everything's linked, and they have just unbelievable amount of resources, and I've yet to even really dive into those. So, and then if Horizon people are listening, we need an iPhone copy.
Yes, yes.
But can't we just download the PDF into one of our?
But PDFs on iPhones are no good. They're just no good. I guess when the iPad comes out, yeah, it's gonna be great.
Yeah.
So,
well, to start at the beginning, this is the 7th year of the Horizon Report, which to me is just totally amazing that it has, you know, it started and it has sustained for that amount of time, and it goes by in such a flash. But the other thing is, it's quite an international group that's involved in this. And now there are Horizon reports for New Zealand and Australia, which I thought was really interesting. But they start the process in September of 2009, and they publish the report in January. So it is a really quick turnaround in terms of information. And it just, you know, makes me think of how quickly information is changing, and this group really is responding to that, you know, really tiny deadline to get information out while it's still new.
Right, and there's things that could come in just this week alone with what they're talking about with the mobile technology. I mean, you know, that iPad, I think people are sort of responding to it mostly like they did the iPhone when that started, but you know, we've yet to see what that's really going to do. Mm-hmm. And that'll be interesting. But they talked a lot about ebooks and things like that. Of course, number one for the year out is mobile computing.
And, yes.
You know, how that has changed and, you know, just how universal that is. And what is it? I'm looking for the quote. There's 4 billion, you know, mobile subscribers, more than 2/3 of whom live in developing countries. I mean, there it is right there, you know. And you know, and I don't know what's happening with schools. What have you heard? Is it being any more adopted into schools at this point? The mobile scene. Or does it still ban the cell phones?
Oh, it's still ban the cell phones.
Yeah.
Lily.
Lily, what was that? Don't ban the cell phones.
And thanks for the chat room about my sound. My For some reason, my microphone input keeps sliding back down, so I'll try and keep an eye on that, too.
I think I better let Lily out.
Okay. But, I think that the part about the smartphones and being able to use them in classrooms, we have some smart boards and Promethean boards and some little voting systems, which are really nice, really expensive. But if we had, there's one piece in the report called Hotspot. It's something they explain about an app that they put in a university system where any cell phone, smartphone can respond to a teacher's interactive presentation, and students can all be part of that without, you know, buying yet another device that only is able to be used in that one area because, you know, it has the Bluetooth ready for it. Right. So I think that would be wonderful to push that down to K-12.
Yeah, definitely. I like they mentioned the study from Houston Community College, and I just heard about this the other day, where they gave, you know, one group mobile computing and, you know, just how much more they got done in their coursework during the spare moments of having that access all the time. And, you know, I mean, it really is becoming the device of choice. And, you know, I mean, I love my computer, but I've never gotten as much use out of my computers as I have my phone. And uh-huh. I can't believe I'm even saying that because I wasn't a cell phone person at all until the iPhone. And now it's where I do all my reading. And, the iPad will probably be sort of a replacement for me with that just because it'll be bigger, you know, but still portable.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that was, I just fixed my sound. I think the other thing that's interesting about these smartphones and small devices, you know, the netbooks, the iPad that, you know, isn't even out yet. Our students at our high school are really liking these little netbooks. You know, they don't take up a lot of real estate on your desk. They're able to, you know, use them for longer periods of time because the battery really holds its charge, you know, because it's such a tiny device. And smartphones, you know, more and more kids are, I mean, prices have come down so that they have web access and they are able to, you know, use all the different apps if they have an iPhone or an iTouch. So, I mean, that's already pushed down into the high schools, but the ability for school systems to integrate all sorts of devices into good teaching and learning, that we need something that just takes all that.
Well, there's a great quote about that. I'm going to dig that up in a second, but those iTouches have moved down to the elementary like I never thought they would.
Really?
This year. Yeah, I took informal surveys right after the holidays. I always do, you know, because that's when everybody gets new technology. And I was asking, I was primarily interested to see about the iPod Nanos due to the fact that they have video. Mm-hmm. And, you know, wondering what effect that's going to have in middle schools and high schools, kids with these cameras that are the size of a stick of gum, you know.
Right.
But most people, when I'd say how many nanos, nobody would raise their hand, and then they'd be biting at the, you know, chomping at the bit to tell me about their iPod touches, and it was unbelievable. Down to second grade, even.
Wow.
I don't think I had any first graders, but I had some second graders. So yeah, you know, they see it. I mean, They know it can do all these things. You know, getting back to what you just said about are we not only bringing these in, but are we, you know, adapting our instruction? One of the quotes that I read over and over is on page 5 in the report. It's talking about, you know, media literacy and you know, the challenges that are still faced. And the quote is, you know, we're far from seeing digital media literacy as a norm, which is kind of depressing. But I'd have to agree with that.
Uh-huh.
you know, I think people still think gadget and not how does this transform us, you know, and if you look at the phone and the mobile computing, I mean, that to me is the most blatant knock on the head that we have to change. You know, you don't need to have a facts-based curriculum when somebody can look stuff up on the phone right away.
Right.
You know, or Google it, you know. So that's just one example of how things have to adapt.
Well, in two instances, that conversation, that particular piece of a conversation came up today. I was in a science class, and the teacher was having some students answer some questions, trying to get a read on, you know, what they knew. And she said, I don't know about these facts. You know, I don't know if I should ask them these facts. I really think they need to have some good background. And I pulled my phone out and I said, if you ask me a question, this is where I'm going to look it up. But if you ask me to reflect and summarize and problem solve, I can't look it up on my iPhone. And she went, oh. But the big conversation on our State of Maine listserv today was the kids have figured out how to go through the windows when they're on an online test, and they bring up their calculator and they bring up Google. And the adults didn't know that they could do that. The adults have to go in and disable certain things on their laptops. But, you know, why are we still asking these questions?
Yeah. Pretty scary.
Well, yeah. It is.
And the real skill, and they talk about this in the Horizon Report in the open content section, which, I think is a really great section. But just that the skills that are critical I like this, in maintaining currency in any discipline, the ability to find, evaluate, and put new information to use. So even if you can grab that cell phone and go and find those answers, what do you do with it, you know, uh-huh. And how do you assess it? Those are the skills that we still, you know, we're still talking about.
Yeah. And along those lines, you know, it just talks about an increasing number of faculty and technology staff are experimenting with possibilities of collaboration and communication offered by mobile computing. You know, we're a couple years into this. You know, people should be more than experimenting. And there was a great quote, and it just talks about faculty and IT people are really starting to understand that we can't ignore this any longer, that we are doing a disservice to our students. You know, so finally, in a really ramped up report, there is that clause that, okay, folks, we may not be ready for this, but the kiddos, you know, students that we're teaching, they need to be taught in a different way.
There's a couple of things that kind of overlap in the report. When they talk about, I'm looking at the gesture-based computing, you know, and we're talking mm-hmm. about iPod Touch or Wii or things like that, that, you know, that not only is that cool and really, you know, amazing, but it's changed our expectations of how to even approach the technology. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we for the longest time we thought the only way to interact is a keyboard and a mouse, and you know, in 10 years that could be, you know, a minority of how mm-hmm. you know, of experiences. So expectations have changed, and I wanted to jump into even like the ebook, how those expectations changed. And Maureen's talking about an article she heard on NPR tonight with all the textbook companies jumping on board with Apple for the iPad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think our expectation was always that technology costs a lot. There's a lot of hurdles in the way. It's big and bulky. And now everything is so much smaller and so much cheaper, and really those boundaries have come way down. I mean, if you're just interacting with gestures, you know, we're at a great place. And, you know, I'd just like to, I'd like to kind of skip to the electronic book section and hear what people think about that. I kind of have a feeling that Apple's going to really give it that extra push that Amazon has brought it so far, and now it's really going to explode, and this is sort of the big turning point. What do you guys think about that with the iPad or where, you know, especially where they're going after the textbook market?
Well, I think that, Alice, get ready if you want to say something.
Okay.
I think that it's just, you know, one of the things about the Horizon report, it just talks about that anytime, anywhere learning. And that's such a theme throughout. And when you have all these devices available, it just makes that learning so much more valuable. Would you buy a Kindle that, and I don't even know, if you're reading in a Kindle and there's a web link, can you go out to the web with it?
I don't believe that's possible at all. No, I could be totally wrong.
Right. But if you have an iPad, you're going to be able, like the right. iTouch, you're able to go out with wireless and, you know, make those links come alive. So, right.
And, you know, I think they're going to bring in a lot of multimedia in the books is what they're looking. Alice, what were you going to say? Sorry about that.
Oh, just it makes the reading come alive in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes it more real, I think, by being able to push the links and get to the sites. So
the thing that's been lacking for me, and you know, in the Kindle or Book Nook or whatever, there hasn't been strong annotation tools, and I think that, you know, according to the report, that is really about to change.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great, and I think Apple will definitely, or apps for Apple will really take advantage of that. Something like having things linkable, just like a web page,
right.
to go out and get more information. I mean, definitely. Or even the ability to tag and categorize. You know, there's a quote in the report that really the typical electronic reader could conceivably hold the entire sum of textbooks and readings for the entirety of one's academic experience. I mean, that's amazing, right? And
yeah,
so if you could tag and you could say, I learned this here and I want this to go into this capsule where I'm going to, you know, be building upon that throughout my life and, you know, dwelling on those ideas, then you could grab it at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I experienced that a year ago. I might have told this story where I was writing a blog article for Tech Learning, and I knew I had this perfect quote to go with what I wanted. And I knew it was one of my professional books, and I spent at least 5 hours on a number of days trying to find that quote, and I underline in my book and everything, but I couldn't remember which book it came out of. I never found it, and I could have tagged that and hung it up in, you know, a special cabinet for later to be used,
right,
you know,
right.
But in my paper book, I mean, paper's just stupid. I hate to say it, but it is, and, you know.
Maybe we should ban paper and not just the chalk.
Right. And, you know, you just can't, it's not malleable, you know,
right.
I mean, there, you could write in it and you couldn't do that on the screen before. And now that's going to change. You're going to be able to, you know, put a voice message to it or link it to somebody else's blog or tag it or have all these other people do it and share those tags.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's what's going to be really exciting. So, you know, I think that's great. The thing that, you know, I'm amazed at, they talk about, I'm looking for the quote, how many people have bought books because of Kindle.
Uh-huh.
It's like, yeah, according to Amazon, people with Kindles buy 3 times as many books as they did before they had Kindles, which is truly stunning. So people are reading more. And, you know, I always thought, and who knows, maybe this will happen now that the iPad is going to muscle in, but you know, Amazon should have given those Kindles away for free.
Yes.
You know, maybe not had the wireless, because I know that's what they're subsidizing. But, you know, you give away the Kindle, you've got people that are going to be buying your books for that machine, you know.
So, yep.
And maybe it'll get so cheap that's what happens. I don't know.
Alice, you want to jump in?
Nope, I'm good.
All right.
Sorry.
I just don't want to hog the conversation. I like the part on page 10 of the report where it really talks about the relevance for teaching, learning, and creative inquiry. And this part is all about colleges and universities giving out some digital tools to their students and doing some research about how they learn, where they learn, how much time they spend with it. And basically, they're finding, which I think we already know, especially in this, personal learning network that we have, that there's really an awful lot of collaboration that goes on with when you put some digital tools in the hands of kids when they're learning, because number one, it's learning on demand, but because of the tool, because it can go in the pocket, it can go on the subway, the bus, hopefully not in the car if they're driving, but they make use of all those tools. It's not like lugging that backpack around, and saying, okay, where's that book or where's that notepad? And so they've proven that students are apt to spend more time studying when they have all those things available to them.
Well, we know from Ben and Ben that they talk about all the time how they love the fact that they can be studying 24/7 if that's what they choose to do.
Yes.
Because they have that device available to them.
Yeah.
Plus, they feel like they read and research more stuff about their studies just because they can access, how they send TED Talks to
mm-hmm.
me.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely.
And I can't even imagine what it must be like to be able to cart all of your college textbooks around in something the size of the Kindle.
Right.
Well,
Nathan, our middle son, the one going to dental school, is an app for his Gross Anatomy book. And that's what he does when he's traveling back and forth to school. Mm-hmm. He pulls out his iPhone and he's studying his Gross Anatomy, and it's not gross because it's anatomy. It's gross because it's but he's studying that on his iPhone, and we're out at lunch, and he goes, "Hey, look at this!" And you wouldn't be lugging around your 20-pound anatomy book.
Well, let's hop off from there into augmented reality, because that's such a great segue. Because, there you have your book that you can place as an overlay of reality and mm-hmm. get information about things that you're actually experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the next best step to what we're talking about. And by the way, somebody, I forget who said it, said, "I'm going to, I love books too," in the chat. And I do too.
Yeah.
I love the smell of them and everything. And I remember telling my daughter, when she was much younger, "Someday everything will be electronic." And she said in a panic, "Let's buy all the books now." Because she loves them too. But that augmented reality, which could be in the form of your ebook.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to tap into things and bring that information to you that you didn't even know existed around you as you're reading this book, or maybe other people reading similar books that connect. That's just fascinating. And, I was at the Museum of Fine Art the other day, and, right away I wanted to pull up my iPhone and use it as an augmented reality,
mm-hmm.
To walk around and look at the paintings. And part of me thought, oh, would that really ruin the experience, though? Would I be too into my phone and not enough into the paintings? But, I kind of grappled with that. But,
But you have a choice.
Yeah.
And otherwise we wouldn't have had that choice.
Right. You go in and you have no docent walking you through.
Right.
And you're on your own.
Yep. Or do you use that, or do we learn how to go to museums differently? And we use, the video and the audio ahead of time before we get to the museum. And then we have it later on to reflect.
Well, we actually did that. We went down because my daughter's studying Egypt. And so on the way down, we played the podcast that my fourth graders had recorded of the docent back in 2005.
Oh my gosh, right.
Of the whole trip that we were doing. So we did that, but still having something right then and there and being able to go out to Wikipedia or other, you know, resources, you know, that's powerful. That is really, you know, something else. Or, you know, think about a class with a bunch of iPads and they're adding notes as they go along and they can see each other's, you know, thoughts that way.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty, that is powerful. All right, what should we hit next?
You know, I mean, those are the real big ones to me. And I think the gesture-based computing, I guess the only thing, you know, I really wanted to add to that is, well, I got a Wii this year. And, you know, I can just see how that would fit so well into to our school. You know, one, get the kids moving, and two, connect it to, you know, any skill, you know. Right. You know, I'm using it to work out mostly, and I'm amazed that I can even get my heart rate up with this video game.
Yeah.
And, but imagine if you were getting students' heart rates up as they were like playing basketball and, you know, dunking the correct answers to some math facts or something, you know.
Right.
You know, wow, that's like three tasks done in one, you know.
Yep.
So I'd love to see that. Go ahead. Yeah, Alice.
Oh, I was just going to say, don't you think it's had a real impact on our culture? I mean, just all the places that you see a Wii in use and all the exercising, you know, for like in some of the older geriatric centers, that kind of thing, nursing homes. It's had a real impact on how people interact with the media.
Right.
Yeah, again, it's changed our expectations, you know. Video games used to be docile, you know, and passive, and you know, that was, you know, a surprise. And, you know, from what I've read, it seems like the Wii has taken a dip, but that it might, you know, be coming back big this year with some new kind of, you know, ideas that are coming out. But, I don't know. I mean, I think they'd be perfect in a school. I really do, you know.
Yeah. One piece, and part of this is because I spent last week a couple of days at the ATIA conference in Florida, where, you know, it was just all assistive technology. And when I look at the part about gesture-based computing, and really, you know, it talks a lot about the iPhone and the iPod and how it can interact with you as, you know, shaking it, turning it, and all of those things. The big impact, I think, in terms of universal design for learning and for assistive technology is that the iPhone and the iTouch have taken equipment and software that normally would have been $8,000 or $9,000 and put it into, you know, under $500. You can now have a device that can go in the hands of a student, an adult, and they're able to interact with their environment and to communicate in a way that otherwise may have been cost prohibitive. So that's really going to change things, you know, for a small population, but it will be able to make them go more mainstream.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What about visual? Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'll wait.
Visual data analysis is where it ends. 4 to 5 years adoption rate. They always, good for them. They always end with one that I've just need to really get my head around and haven't yet. You know, I mean, of course, reading that right away and how we can now look at patterns through data. But I do agree that's like 5 years out. I don't see that right now in the immediate use at like the elementary level. What kind of examples of that have you seen or are considering when they talk about being able to see data like that? What tools are you using?
Well, it was interesting. I looked in the Horizon Project Advisory Board, and Ruben Pudentora is on the board, and he's a huge part of the main MLTI laptop project. And when I saw him present one time, he took, and here's an example, the H1N1 flu and the data that we that people were collecting about the flu and where it was spreading. He showed us, you know, 3 years ago, how there was a piece of software that, and it would have been an enormously expensive piece of software that, you know, only the Department of Defense would have used. But now, because of all the technology and the power of laptops, you know, they can bring down the that technology into something that can run on a laptop and that students can now manipulate the data. But you take a look at a map and you watched where this flu was spreading, and then you took that visual representation and crunched the numbers, and then you could go back and forth between numbers and looking at visual data. And it was just astounding, you know, to because of the rapid pace at which it happened. You think about drawing a graph or adding, you know, input to a graph. This just happened instantaneously. So I think that's going to be huge for math and science and where we need to really improve in the whole area of math and science.
But, you know, possibly collecting any type of data, too. You know, it's just, I mean, that's what they're talking about. It's no longer a labor. And you could really, you know, be able to track a student's performance, behavior, moods, you know, and show that, you know, in a myriad of ways and how it all relates much easier. I mean, I can't see that happening now for a teacher with 20-some students, but, you know, I'm sure it's coming. They mentioned Wordle in this part,
yeah.
And so I connected immediately, of course, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, that's not a perfect way to look for patterns, you know, like you have to kind of manipulate or interpret what Wordle does, but I thought that was interesting.
Mm-hmm. And Connie's saying Wordle mentioned there, it's an easy sell to you know, your staff, because it's
yeah,
easy
exactly
use, you know,
right. Exactly.
But that's go ahead, Alice.
Oh, I just was going to say, I think we need to do more work around data and data analysis with teachers, though. I mean, it's hard. You know, we haven't really, we now have the tools we haven't had before. And now we have all these powerful tools. We haven't generally been trained to really talk and create different ways of collecting data very well. That's not a teaching skill, really.
Right. Well, I think we collect a lot of data. I mean, I part of me thinks we're not using the data.
Yeah,
and
I guess
perhaps
that's right.
It's because we don't see some of those patterns that we could easily spit out. Here are some paths that we can go down with this student. You know, having things overlap. I don't know. I mean, I think there is a lot of data being collected more than ever. I'm not sure, you know, how it's being used. If that's what this is getting to, being able to look at it differently. I don't know. I could talk a lot about that, but I probably shouldn't. A lot of data.
But I don't think we've known how to manipulate it and what to do with the data. That's, you know, I think that's been a perennial problem.
Yeah.
But.
Anything that we've left out before we open content? Gosh, we haven't really talked about that.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, how could we miss that?
I know. I glossed right over it. Yeah, that changes how people perceive just sharing everything. I'm doing Scratch right now, Alice. Cheryl
you are?
Knows that. Yeah. So this is I moved it up earlier in the year, and of course, you know, that really brings it home for students when they see they can reverse engineer other people's work and learn right from that. It's very, very exciting.
That's
any
great.
Quotes that you got from, whoops, sorry. Any quotes you got from that section or anything that we should share before?
I
let that piece go.
I think that was the section that really talked about, you know, preparing students for the world beyond, that they will need to have good critical thinking, problem solving skills, and collaboration, and they need practice in all those areas.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting about the communities of practice that have formed around the content. Just sort of a different way of looking at how you form relationships with your content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that, it goes back to those mobile phones again, too, you know, because this content can be, you know, with the developing, you know, countries, 2/3 of the phones being there, they can access that, you know, that information like never before. So it's just, you know, perfect. And what does that mean for schools if we're opening up things more and more and people can kind of build their own curriculum?
I'm going to jump in with a question from Matt Montang, who's in the chat room, and he says, does anyone have any concerns about some of the organizations behind the Horizon Report? And I guess not, because a couple of times Vicki Davis was involved on the conversation, and Lucy Gray, and they just talked about how amazing that whole process was and how open it was. So I don't know. Matt, what do you know?
Connie, yes, Matt. Are you asking if we critically analyze what we read? I mean, truthfully, I haven't dug up all the people that have put this together. Do I feel like it comes from a neutral place that connects with what I'm reading elsewhere? I do. You know, I mean, you know, the mobile phone is a great example. I mean, you know, that, you know, you can see that in other ways. And then they talk about, well, what are the ramifications for education? And that's what I...
Right. And I think, you know, we triangulate. You know, I really like the Horizon Report because it pushes me. So.
And I like how they say this is not a predictive tool. You know, it's just more like looking at what's there, and, you know, they go out and they collect the data and the anecdotes, and you know, they do offer a lot of resources to go and continue getting more information. I mean, and that's really well balanced what they offer up there. It takes a long time to get through that part. That's right. Really the meat of it.
Right. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All good.
Matt says he can't find the list, but he does question the motives a bit. I'd love to hear more about that. I mean, that's definitely good to discuss. I'd love to hear his thoughts on that.
It's a blog post, Matt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yes, Peggy.
Well, right, Connor. There are people involved from other organizations that are outside. Isn't that true? That helped put it together besides New Media and EDUCAUSE?
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
And they have a whole thing on their methodology that I didn't even read this year, but it's at the back, and the advisory board. Yeah, we've got Microsoft, we've got Open University of Japan, Future Lab, Project Tomorrow. It's pretty well spread out. Smithsonian American Art Museum.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. On a lighter note.
Yes.
Geek of the Week.
Hey. I have the best geek of the week.
Well, then you better go last.
Oh, you do?
I do.
You have to go last. You can't,
if you click on this link, though, you're going to just go to your happy place because music already starts immediately. So I don't know if I should be first or last.
You have to be last.
Okay, because it does. It's just going to take people. All right, I'm going to be last.
All right, how about if I go first, if I can drag this in? Let's see. I have classroom partners for VoiceThread.
Oh.
I can't. Oh, there it goes. Which just basically is somebody's organizing a list of, of people looking to collaborate with, organized by K2, 3, 5, 6, 8, 9, 12, and so forth.
Oh, nice.
People looking to collaborate on VoiceThread projects.
Wow.
I will put that in the chat.
Wonderful. That's very cool. You want me to go?
Sure.
This is a little one, but I thought this is handy, especially with the iPad coming out, because that's one thing I do look forward to with the iPad is PDFs, like we mentioned earlier, will not be a burden as they are on the phone, iPhone. And this is called PDF My URL. So, you know, sometimes you want to print out a bunch of pages maybe to give to parents or something, and you just type in the your URL and you download the PDF. And, you know, the benefit is sometimes when you print right from the web browser, you get a mixed bag of images or where the text is going to be. And this is PDF'd. So it's pretty cool.
Ooh.
Yeah, little one, nice. But I like it.
All right.
Are you still trying to get your link in, Alice?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Getting there.
You want to put it in the back channel and I'll do it?
I'm here. Okay. I got it.
All right. And I know I've mentioned a couple of times, ATIA, Assistive Technology International Association. They had a conference in Orlando, Florida last week, and then they will have one also in Chicago in the fall. And I got to meet some really awesome developers of products for assistive technology and for some of our really challenged learners. But the one that has impacted me the most is one, it's a company called thinkingmoves.com, and Chris and Roberta have developed this movement music product where, it works wonderfully on interactive whiteboards, or it works great on a TV screen or a computer screen. But it takes you through a series of just some arm movements and some really nice music. And it kind of relaxes your brain and gives you a nice motor break and motor movement. And a IT director from the midsection of the country took a video of a classroom, kindergarten classroom, 28 kids. The teacher put this on her whiteboard. And, you know, the students did maybe 3 minutes of exercises. And as soon as the music stopped, they all turned around, went back to their seats, and started to work. It was just, like, so calming. It was a great transition tool. And then a few minutes into the activity, she noticed a few of them were getting restless, and so she held up the cards. There's some little flashcards that also mimic the kind of motor and mimic the motor part that they'd done just previously. And the kids immediately started doing the exercises, did that for 2 or 3 flashcards. She put them down and they went back to work. I'm gonna put the link in now. And when you click on it, the music starts immediately. I probably played the music 4 times today while I was doing my federal E-rate form. It was so calming, but I gave it to a couple of classroom teachers to use in their classrooms, and the next day I got an email from them saying how amazing it was and how they noticed the kids were just so they were able to transition much more easily, and they just really responded to the product. So it's by thinkingmoves.com. It's called Me Moves, and they, Roberta and Chris, are going to come on our show in the near future.
Cool.
Very nice. Yes, that music is lovely. Oh,
isn't it?
That's great. Oh, they're coming
up. And
on.
The best part is in April, they're coming up with an app for that. And it just fits right on your iTouch. And it's like Zen for your iTouch or your iPhone.
Any price range that you know of on that?
I don't know the app. The app is probably going to be pretty cheap. But the price for the DVD plus the DVD is the movie part. The CD is the music that you can take in the car with you. And then the little flip chart of all the moves that you see on the movie, that software is $54.99. It's like the price of a Wii game.
Wow.
That's
good.
Nice. But I'm looking for the app, because that's definitely going on my iPhone.
Very cool.
Yeah. So we made it. We did the Horizon Report again. It's
you two did.
Well, Alice, you were there spurring us on.
coughing us on.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry to be.
Hey, and we'll let you do the outro, Alice.
Oh, boy.
Lily can sit in.
Yeah, she can. She's out chasing the deer at the moment.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, jeez.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us for the Horizon Report. It's been great. Thanks to EdTech Talk and World Bridges for letting us hang out here on Thursday nights. We appreciate it. And this is Seedlings signing off. I don't know if you guys want to say goodbye. But.
I'll say goodbye.
Me too, and we have Ben and Ben next week. Is that right?
Is it next week?
No. Christian Long next week.
Christian Long next week.
Oh, right. Next week we're on vacation. Then we have Christian Long when we come back.
No. Next week we have Christian
Long. Oh, right. Oh, man. Vacation isn't here yet?
Not yet, Bob. Not yet.
Christian Long next week. Then vacation. Then Ben and Ben.
Ben and Ben.
Go ahead, Alice.
Oh, I was just going to say, Ben and Ben are hoping to have some kids from Science Leadership on. So.
That's great. And Christian Long's going to talk about the Alice Project, the annotated Alice book that he did with his high school students. And Alice and I were part of teaming up and doing some feedback for them, and just amazing writing that was happening over there. So it should be a really great show.
Oh, nice.
So, another week, yes. Carol says. Yeah. Day for DERF.
Well, thanks to everybody, and enjoy your week. And we'll see you next week here with Christian Long.
Good night.
Okay, stopping the broadcast. Bye.